Sorry about that. Good morning, everyone. Almost got up here without a microphone. Probably wouldn't have worked out too well. But good morning. I want to, again, welcome everybody here and thank you all for coming. It's great to see everybody. We have been talking about who is the real Jesus? Will the real Jesus stand up? And we've been talking about this for the past few weeks in a series discussing Jesus' true identity and not dealing with as much the genealogy or where he's from and what part of the world, but more so talking about Jesus' real character, his real nature, who he was as an individual. And the reason why this is so important to us is because so often in a country like ours, in a world where we live, you have all these different ideas that people have about who Jesus is. You know, whether he was tall or short isn't nearly as important as understanding his nature, because we are called to imitate him. We are called to reflect him. When we say Jesus is Lord and that we're going to follow him, that we're going to be his disciples, then it's important that we understand exactly not just what would he do, but why would he do this? Why wouldn't he do something else? And so as we're peeling back the layers on this, I want to talk about a particular aspect of Jesus that means a lot to me. And I call this particular version of Jesus, if you will, Pet the Lamb Jesus. Call him Pet the Lamb Jesus. I've actually, there's a running joke I'll maybe tell you about it some other day, but Pet the Lamb Jesus kind of is what some people think of when they think of Jesus, this soft kind of almost weak or docile kind of character, as though Jesus was not a man of strength, but that he was very passive, you know? And so as we look at this, I want to kind of correct the record about Jesus' true nature and his true character. And the title of the sermon today is Words with Friends. Words with Friends. And the thing about it is, when we look at different passages in the Bible to talk about Jesus' nature and character, sometimes we can read the words and we can forget that words have meanings, and sometimes those meanings over time change. And we need to look at it in its original context. You know, I think about, we'll just take a second here. Just close your eyes. Everybody close your eyes. I'm not going to come out here and bite you or nothing. Close your eyes, and I want you to just imagine in your head, what is the first image of Jesus that comes to mind? What's the first picture of Jesus that you can think of? Like, if somebody were to say, well, picture Jesus, what do you think? What immediately comes to mind? And you could open them again, because, again, we're talking about this in the context of what the world projects the image of Jesus to be, right? And you get pictures like this, and, you know, you see Jesus, he's literally holding a lamb in this picture, right? We've all seen pictures like this. You've grown up, you've seen. I remember when I was little, they had the little church fans, some of the church I used to go to, and you get the picture of Jesus, and like this one, he's, you know, sitting with the kids, and he's generally, you know, he has a non-threatening face, and he looks very, you know, peaceful, you know, like, there's a common thread in this, and, you know, not only just the fact that all of these happen to be, when I Googled them, they all happen to be white. We'll talk about that next week. But for this week, we're looking at this, and it's like when you pull up images of Jesus, all you do is put in Jesus in a search term, and you find a common thread. Even when you look at Jesus, like in children's books, it's like, you know, we know this story. This storm is raging and everything. And it's like, Jesus is like, no, it's okay, you know, it's cool. Let's all be happy, right? Like, this book is called A Scary Storm. The story of Jesus in a stormy sea, and you're looking at Jesus, and he's like, no, it's okay, everything's happy, right? Because oftentimes, we think of Jesus, and it's like, there's absolutely this characterization of him as though he's kind of just this soft kind of happy guy, right? But when we think about how we tell people, if Jesus is Lord and you're to follow him and you're to sacrifice and give it up and do anything and everything to be like him, you're thinking, why would I want to be like this man? You know? Like, we want to be something that's a little more, you know, I'm looking at some of the manly men around here, and you know, it's like we want to be, you know, a little tougher, right? We want to, you know, we want to be men, you know, we want to project some type of masculinity. Because oftentimes Jesus is projected as though he's this borderline kind of metrosexual, maybe effeminate character. And when you think about it, what does our media say when we think of heroes? I put in heroes, right? And you come up with this guy, right? Now, this guy's got muscles. I mean, look at his jawline. Look at his neck. I mean, you know, he's strong. He projects strength. You know, this guy, he's a little more dark and sinister. But the point is, when we think of superheroes, we tell this to our kids. We see this. We go to the movies. We watch television. We read books. And our heroes, they project strength and power and confidence. They're not necessarily mean or sinister, but they always project a certain strength that isn't often identified with Jesus. You know, G.I. Joe, we think of all the toughness, all the bravado. See, these are things that often are separated and not associated with Jesus. Because, again, so many people have been taught this pet the lamb Jesus, right? Jesus who's never going to hurt anybody. He's never going to, you know, do anything that's considered offensive or aggressive, or he's just going to sit back and just let everybody do whatever they want to do. I want to look at Matthew chapter 5. This is a passage that we see some characteristics that stand out. And oftentimes, the words, we read them on the paper, but sometimes they can be misread because we don't understand what the words mean in context. Starting in verse 1, it says, "Now when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, 'Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you.'" You know, we see all this blessed this and blessed this person and blessed this characteristic, and yet the characteristics that are being shown there are not necessarily things that we equate with something positive. We look at it and we, you know, I think about how it says, you know, blessed are those who are poor in spirit and blessed are those who are meek. One of the characteristics that you'll find, and we'll talk about this here in a few seconds, but one of the characteristics you'll find about meekness in earlier translations of the Bible, the more recent translations use the word humility in a replacement for the word meek. So if you go back to earlier translations of the Bible, you can find the word meek like over 120 times. I think it's about 123 times. But as time went on and you have new translations, the word meek was removed and it was replaced with humble humility. And so the actual word meek in newer translations can only be found 20 times. And in some of the newest translations written in the past couple decades, you might only find it two or three times. Now, this is important because as we think about, again, trying to get a real picture and perspective of who Jesus actually was versus popular society and mainstream society's thoughts about Jesus, one of the things that can be difficult is how is it that I can respect and want to follow and get others to want to follow somebody who was meek? Somebody who was considered meek. And a lot of this is because meek oftentimes gets translated as weak. It gets translated as someone who is passive and docile and won't stand up for themselves, who won't fight for justice. And see, what we're going to find here over the next few minutes is that's exactly the opposite of what the word meek is. Now, we're not going to deal with the Webster's definition of it in the dictionary, but it's important to understand a couple of things about meek. And we're going to look at this as we move forward. The first thing to understand is your prophets. You know, he made this point at the very end here where he says, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. See, he's saying that the prophets who came before you, those men were also meek. We're going to look at this here in a second, but Moses was considered the most meek man on the planet at one point. You think, well, how can Moses be meek? What was it about Moses that was so meek? David was called meek and considered meek. Well, but he was, you know, the king, and he was a man after God's heart. What is this meek thing? How is it that we've projected this? How is it we've gotten this so wrong about what it means to be meek? Now this, I say, what's in a word? I like to do word clouds and word searches. But when you think about the word meek, one of the things that happens is over time things get translated and they lose their meaning or they get other meanings that are associated with them, right? And so a lot of times it's a matter of how things get translated. The word meek actually was a word that kings and conquerors used to identify with themselves. It was said that this powerful king was a very meek man. So what does that meekness mean? How can you reconcile the two if meek somehow indicates a lack of strength or a lack of power? And it's interesting because it goes back to a literacy thing. And I don't want to dig too far into this, but one of the things that you have is where people for years were not functionally literate, and so they relied on others to read to them, to translate things to them. And what you often find is that people, either they may have a bad agenda, or maybe they themselves understand it only from one way, and so they teach it that way. And so over time, meek has lost its meaning. Meek was actually something that was a word that would describe animals. So you would refer to an animal that was powerful and strong, and yet when you domesticate it, when you train it, you make it where it would submit to your will. So meek would be something that you would describe an ox or a powerful horse. They would say large war animals, horses that would pull chariots, they would describe the horses as meek. Now, anybody who's ever seen a horse, some of us have seen more horses than others, but anybody who's ever seen a horse or ever seen a mule or ever seen a large farm animal, ox pulling, you know, tilling the ground, you understand that those animals are not weak. You know, but again, we have to understand that things get changed. This is Jim Morrison. There was a famous band called The Doors. And he made a statement. He said, whoever controls the media controls the mind. Now, obviously, the media that we have now isn't the same as the media you would have had 500 or 1,000 years ago when the Bible was being translated and things like that. But the larger point is that the things that we take in, the images and the sounds and the words that we read, what we take in oftentimes gives us clues and things that we attribute falsely, even when it comes to how we view Jesus. Psalm chapter 37, starting in verse 1, it says, do not fret because of those who are evil, or be envious of those who do wrong. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your ways to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It leads only to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed, but those who hope in the Lord will inherit the land. A little while, and the wicked will be no more. Though you look for them, they will not be found. But the meek will inherit the land and enjoy peace and prosperity. Let's peel this apart a little bit. Let's look at this. We see where it says, commit your ways. Commit your ways. When it says commit your ways, that is interpreted as those burdens, those problems you have, just let them roll off. You roll your concerns and you give those over to God, right? Be still and be patient, it says. Still and be patient. A meek person says, I'm going to be still and I'm going to wait on God. I'm not going to rely on my own strength and my own might and my own power. I'm not going to waste time trying to force people to do things. I'm going to trust God. I'm going to wait for him and let him give me an answer. Let him work it out. Unconcerned about the wicked. We see that in verse 7 where he says, don't waste time being concerned about how the wicked are prospering and thriving and how they're getting theirs. You trust God. That's what it means to be meek. It's not a weakness or a sign that you're not interested in being strong and being courageous, but it's saying you're doing this in the context of trusting and obeying God. It says not to anger, not to be worried. It says it results in peace. See, what has happened is the word meek, when we look at Jesus and we think of him as a meek person, too often it's because we don't understand that meek is not a sign that you're not strong. It's a sign that even in you don't rely on your strength, but that you have been willing to submit yourself to God and allow his strength to be what controls and dictates your actions in your life. James chapter 1, another passage that talks about this. This is another one of those where if you go back to older translations, you'll see the word meek. But starting verse 19, it says, dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry, because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. Therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly or meekly accept, which means to receive, the word planted in you, which can save you. It says, it compares meekness to the opposite of moral filth. It's saying get rid of all the moral, the carnal nature, the desire to do things on your own and get what you want in the flesh. He's saying no, submit that to God, meekly, humbly accept his ways, and then accept and receive the word that's planting in you, which can save you. Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 1, it says, as a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble or meek and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. Another example in Numbers, and this is again going back to talking about Moses. It says, Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. Has the Lord spoken only through Moses? They asked. Hasn't he also spoken through us? And the Lord heard this. Now Moses was a very humble, very meek man, more than anyone else on the face of the earth. Now we know what happens after this. For those of you who don't know, spoiler alert, God addresses them and says, you don't talk about Moses that way. Moses, he isn't just like everybody else. Moses, I talk to him directly. He's so humble and unassuming and willing to submit. I trust him so much, I talk to him directly, face to face. A distinction that nobody else ever had. And see, what we find is that we look at somebody like Moses and we can see that God vindicated him and he stepped up and he put Aaron and Miriam in her place. But what we find about meekness is that Moses didn't feel the need to defend himself. Moses didn't feel the need to come up and argue with Aaron and Miriam because he knew that he was living in concert with what God was instructing him. See, meekness is a sign that if you're going to be like Jesus, you're willing to submit yourself to God and take up your cross and follow him. To be meek in the face of God is to trust him. And as we've seen in these other passages, it's a matter of patience, restraint, and allowing God to handle your affairs. It's saying, I'm going to defer to God because I trust him. Because I know that as strong as I may think of myself, he's stronger than I am. You know, I was talking about this a few minutes ago about horses. And you see this, is, for those of you all who don't know, this is a woman, she's training this horse, right? You know, I was hoping to see Kaylee because I know she loves to ride. She loves horses. And see, the thing about a horse is nobody walks up to a horse and thinks, wow, look at that horse. It's so meek. You know? What a meek animal, right? But the fact of the matter is, if you use this proper context, this horse, all the training, all the repetition, all the work that they put in to make these horses so that they can perform, there's a level of meekness the animal has to have in order for it to be broken. And when we think about what it means to be meek, what it means to submit yourself to God, it means that there has to be a level of brokenness on your part where you're willing to submit. And that's always hard because we have so much pride. You know, another animal, nobody would look at this guy right here and think of him as meek. But the fact of the matter is, we've been using these animals for years. But they have to be meek. They have to be trained. They have to be put into submission. You know, even when you see it right here, like in this picture, that it gives a whole new context to when it says, do not be yoked together with unbelievers. Because you got two strong animals. If they're not going in the same direction, you'll either get nothing done or you'll tear up the place, right? But that's what it means to be meek. It means I am willing to be broken to a point where I'm going to do the work that's required of me. Another passage I want to look at here in 1 Peter chapter 2. Starting in verse 18, it says, slaves, in reverent fear of God, submit yourself to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for good, for doing good, and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin, and no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. I'll read that again. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross so that we might die to sin and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed, for you were like sheep going astray. But now you have returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls. Luke chapter 22, starting in verse 39, says, Jesus went out as usual to the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. On reaching the place, he said to them, pray that you will not fall into temptation. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down and prayed, Father, if you are willing, take this cup from me, yet not my will, but yours be done. An angel from heaven appeared to him and strengthened him. And being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. When he rose from prayer and went back to the disciples, he found them asleep, exhausted from sorrow. Why are you sleeping? He asked them. Get up and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. We see here two examples where it's talking about Jesus. And yes, he was a meek man, but what does it mean to be meek? It means that he entrusted himself, as it said, to the one who judges justly. And even as we see here, he says, not my will, but yours be done. That is what it means to be meek. To say, I know I'm as strong as a bull. I know that I'm as sleek as a horse. I know that I can do these things, but I'm going to submit myself to your will. That is what it means to be meek. That is what it means to be like Christ. But it's so important that we understand this, that the willingness to submit is, in fact, what is wrapped up in the definition of being meek. And so being meek is not at all a matter of being weak or docile or just taking it. I use the example of how there are plenty of times, and I had this conversation last night. It's amazing how God gives you stuff just to kind of put you in the right frame of mind, but I was having a conversation with a guy. He used to be the pastor of a church that I was in Cincinnati years ago when I was a kid. And we were talking about this, and what we were talking about was how there are things that go on in our society, things that I've been subjected to, things that plenty of people have been subjected to. It could be unfair treatment on the job. It could be at the hands of the police. It could be through a relationship with somebody in your family. And oftentimes, what I was sharing with him was that oftentimes I will get criticized by many of my friends and peers because they'll say something to the effect of, you should have fought back. You should have sought remedy. You should have done something else. But I knew that it wasn't my place to retaliate. It wasn't my place to respond because, just like it said, I have to, if I'm going to be like Jesus, I have to be willing to wait on him. I have to be willing to submit myself to him because he's the one who judges justly. But do we actually embody that and take that part of Jesus in? Do we consider that being weak? Well, I don't want justice to not be done. I don't want people to go unpunished. They need to know what they did to me. They need to know how bad they hurt me. They need to know. And there's time for that. There are times when that needs to be done. But in our hearts, are we willing to say, not my will, not what I want, because I see the big picture. I see the greater good. See, when we think about meekness from the standpoint of a large, powerful, strong figure that is willing to submit itself to God, suddenly Jesus on the cross saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, it takes on a whole new light. Suddenly it sounds, it looks, it feels different, and suddenly we understand how it is that Jesus, who had all the power and all the things given him, we looked at that last week where Satan is tempting him. He's saying, I'll give you this and I'll make this happen for you. And he says, no, because I'm subject to my Father. Do we understand Jesus in that way and do we apply Jesus that way in our life? A few questions here before we finish up. Do I consider meekness a positive quality or a negative one? And how would my attitude change if I examine Christ more closely? Christ was the perfect example of meekness, and yet, even though the Bible tells us directly, passage after passage, about his meekness, his humility, sometimes we have a difficult time reconciling the idea of being meek. And we have to just be honest and say sometimes we have a difficult time wanting to be like Jesus because we don't view him as a powerful figure. We view him as someone who was weak. Do I view Christ as an example of weakness or strength? Does his example serve to empower me during times of trouble? When you're going through it, when you're going through a hard time, when you know that things are unfair, when you know that you're being treated poorly. I use that example of where it talked about slaves and their masters, because notice it said, not just the good ones, not just the ones who are your overseers who are treating you well, but what about the ones who are treating you poorly? Are you willing to submit to them? Are you willing to be meek in the face of mistreatment? Are you willing to humble yourself in that situation like Jesus did? A man who, as I said, there was no sin. He never did anything to deserve his treatment, but he was willing to do it because he understood the will of his Father and he understood the big picture. How willing am I to submit to the circumstances that God puts in my life? Do I fight them and him until I get my way, or am I one that trusts God's will for my life? You know, we talked about this last week when we talked about prosperity, Jesus, and how, you know, the idea, well, you know, some people believe, well, God doesn't want me to be broke. God doesn't want me to go through these harsh circumstances. How could a loving God want me to endure cancer? How could he want me to endure the loss of a loved one? How could he want this for me? And when we look at Jesus and his example, he's saying, God, just a few minutes ago, you were saying, you parting the clouds, and you're saying to me, you know, you're saying to everybody, this is my son with whom I'm well pleased. So then why would you let me die? Why would you put me in a position, well, isn't there another way? But that's what he was doing in the garden. He's saying, isn't there another way? But because of his meekness and his humility, he was willing to accept the fact, no, there is no other way, and if there is no other way, then I'm going to go out here, this strong figure, and I'm going to be willing to submit to the will of the Lord. Is this how we handle situations in our life that are tough? Let's face it, some are tougher than others. But do we trust him? Do we give it to him? Do we give it to God? Because that is meekness when we submit ourselves and trust him. And finally, have I been uncertain about the power of Christ in my life? Do I view the Spirit as a source to increase me spiritually? I ask this question last because if we really get down to it, sometimes we're not certain that Christ and his example is always the right way to be. Sometimes submission is not always the easiest way out. It's not always the thing that we want and are willing to submit ourselves to. And we can become uncertain about that Holy Spirit that's supposed to be dwelling in us and guiding us and ordering our steps. It's like, I know what God is telling me, but I'm starting to doubt. Maybe because this is the image of Christ that you've had, that he's weak and he's soft and he doesn't fight. If that's an image of Christ that you have, maybe you've been unwilling to this point to submit your life and submit yourself to him. But don't walk away from here today without understanding exactly who Christ is and what he did for you. If you want to better understand, if you want to reconcile and make sense of the fact that, you know what, yes, I know my life is messed up. Yes, I know I need a Savior. Yes, I know I need to come to God, but I want to understand how to make sense of this Jesus thing, then come forward. Let us study the Bible. Let us sit down. Let us help you understand. As a church, we want to help you get closer to him so that you can be one who is willing, who is certain of the power of God. If you're somebody who has lost faith, maybe you once believed and maybe you once understood that being meek and being willing to submit to God was something that I was willing to do, but lately, I just don't trust him. But lately, it's like that animal that's breaking away and you want to do your own thing. Lately, you're just not feeling, but you want to. We ask that you come forward so that we can pray for you, so that we as a church can help one another in that effort. But what's so important is that we walk away from here with an understanding that meekness, submission to God, being willing to do it God's way is not a sign of weakness, but it's a sign of amazing strength. The Holy Spirit gives us amazing power to do those things that we otherwise can't do by ourselves. And if you want that, if you want to be confident and have a feeling and certainty of knowing that you're with God and that you're doing His will and that He's in your life, we ask that you come forward as we stand and sing our song of invitation.